CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, baby. There's a little bit of Stevie Wonder for you to start your day off properly, and we are here for a Monday morning live on CliffCentral.com. Just quickly, a friend of mine said over the weekend that he's got one of those standing desks. You know those desks that you put on top of your desk, and I'm kind of wondering if that isn't something I should worry about or think about, because apparently it's much better for you. Your posture improves. You know, you're not leaning over a keyboard the whole time. You can adjust the height, so it really is ergonomic. And a lot of people swear by these things.
Yeah, and it makes sense now that we're at home as well, because if you take a break from your desk, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're trying to do the right thing and take breaks.
Right.
You're going to go and sit on your couch or lie on your bed. So there's not much standing that we're doing. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's. I just got to check out what the price of these things, you know, is, because I think it could be fun to do. By the way, I found the most interesting article, and I've kept this open on my laptop for you, Leanne. This is a story about how human farts are the biggest problem in global warming.
No, it was cows.
No.
How are we the problem now?
Listen to this. This guy is a climate consultant. His name is Leon Loebscher, all right? He says he's fortunate to work in a field that is exceptionally relevant, interesting, and perfectly aligned with his personal interests and passions. He spends most of his free time reading books, articles, and the latest research on climate change. And as a bonus...
And farts.
As a bonus, it keeps him up to date and sharp as a knife. No, flatulence, he says, is not a passion of mine, but calculating greenhouse gas emissions and the impact on climate change is a big part of what I do. It's something that often occupies my mind. So he says,
well,
listen to this.
Yeah, I blame the vegans because of all the beans, you know?
Oh, come on.
So here's the maths. This is what we need to pay attention to. First of all, a study done all the way back in 1994 found that on average, every person admits 705 milliliters of gas a day. Almost a liter of farts comes out of all of us every day.
Wait, what?
a liter of gas.
Oh, my God. No.
You don't think it's a lot, but it's a lot.
That reminds me of when I went for a scan. It was just a general body checkup.
Mm-hmm.
And she was scanning my abdomen area. And she was showing me all the organs on the screen and, you know, telling me what's what. And there were these enormous black gaps. And I said to her, what are those? And she said, just farts.
Oh, wow. Okay, sure. Well, this guy did a calculation, right? So he reckons 50 mils of every fart is, well, of the total day's farts is methane. 68 mils is carbon dioxide. So what the study also found is that only 3 in 10 people emit methane as a result of differences in their gut biomes, okay? Using this information, there are about 7.8 billion people on the planet, so he calculated the following. Global annual methane emissions from human flatulence is approximately 27,931,000 kilograms of methane from human farts. Global annual CO2 emissions from human flatulence is 384 million kilograms. Since methane is 34 times more potent as a greenhouse gas, we can combine these as a total carbon dioxide equivalent footprint, which results in this 1.333 million tons of CO2 equivalent. Now,
makes you wonder when you're in a public space, like maybe a shared office space or something.
Right.
How much of the air is farts?
So global emissions from farts are more than the annual emissions of the countries of Bermuda, Samoa, the Cayman Islands, and the Solomon Islands combined.
Wow.
All those farts.
I don't want to think about this.
Mm-hmm. We live in a fart-filled world, let me tell you. Global emissions from global emissions from farts are equivalent to driving a medium-sized car 200,000 times around the Earth. Think about that.
Well, if we could harness the farts, we could drive for free with no petrol.
So what are you supposed to do about this, Leanne? I mean, what can you do if you're a big climate change activist, but you're farting, you know? What can you do?
There's nothing to be done, friends.
No, there are some things. No, there's some things you can do. Number one,
let it out.
Number one, eat less meat. Yeah, because meat produces more farts than vegetables. Number two, drive less or drive electric. Number three, fly less. Number four, buy less and buy better. So there's, you know, you don't consume what you don't need. And finally, use less energy. But basically, you're going to, you know, more or less going to keep farting the same way as you have. Isn't that useful to know? Aren't you glad you came here this morning?
Now I feel bad that I dared someone over the weekend to do this farting thing.
What farting thing?
So, I have a friend who's very... you dare him to do anything and he will.
Yeah.
Well, you don't even have to dare him. He just does it. Like, for instance, if he finds an intercom in a store, he'll just grab it and start talking.
Oh, brilliant.
Like, if he's with his wife, he'll go, "Christelle, come to the reception, please, Christelle."
How old is this friend of yours?
And, my age.
I love it. I love it.
And I saw a TikTok clip of also a grown man with this dead straight face sauntering over to the intercom in a store. You can see the bottles of Coke behind him and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he picks up the intercom and he farts into the intercom.
That's good.
So that, it's like it goes through the whole store. So that's what I've dared him to do.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Lee says...
Did he do it?
Well, he's only just received the dare as of yesterday.
He'll do it. He'll record it for you as well. Lee said, Sia's face just screams, "Can we please talk about something else?"
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right. Oh, man. All right, so tell me about this Naomi Campbell story, because I didn't know this, that she was a singer. Really? Naomi Campbell singing?
In my mind, this is a continuation of random things you don't need to know, like when Cher covered the Click song by Mary Makeba. I put this story in that category. Let's travel back to 1994, 1995, when Naomi, even though, yes, we still know her now, but she was like really the thing back then.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's just clearly people who wanted to make more money out of the situation. So they thought, well, if she's so famous, maybe she should release an album. And then also in the process, that was the same era where she started to, well, she released a novel, by the way, that after researching myself, it was discovered that there was a ghostwriter who wrote the novel and they just slapped Naomi's name on it.
Before we get into Naomi's song, let's just remind ourselves of how shitty Cher's song was when she'd covered Miriam Makeba. Here comes the tough part.
So bad.
Yeah, come on, do this one. Oh, Jesus. So bad, so bad. I mean,
Were the clicks in the clicks?
There were no clicks, and she didn't know which one
she's
to put
K's
where.
She's using K's and L's.
Yeah, yeah, shame. Shame.
Nothing.
All right, nothing.
No clicks.
No clicks. So
beautiful, isn't it?
Before Sia tells us about Naomi's singing career, let's hear what she sounds like. Here's her doing a cover of All Through the Night. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's from her album Baby Woman, all right? Listen to this.
Even just the title.
Yeah. So terrible.
So nice.
And she hasn't even started singing. All right, take it away, Naomi. Come on. Sing for us, baby.
Off the
it's not horrible. It's really not horrible. It's very average.
It is average because
it's like when your little sister, your little sister grabs a microphone at like a karaoke and starts singing. That's what it sounds like. It's not horrible.
Firstly, I was surprised that this is still available online. Like, I listened to it on Apple Music. The full album is still there. Most of it, it comprises of her sing speaking.
Yeah.
It's just her on top of the beat. And that is what she does. But here's the kicker. This album sold 175 copies in the first 2 weeks.
Only
175.
Not 175,000.
No. This is at the height of her career.
Wow.
175 copies. It was not a success anywhere except Japan. She was literally big in Japan.
Shame. That's terrible.
And after that, like all of the reviews, like one of the greatest reviews for the album was published in The Mirror. And they said, don't give up on your day job, Naomi.
Well, you think, you know, if you consider that William Shatner has outsold her, just listen to this.
Is this the real life?
Listen.
Is this just fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
Caught in a landslide? No escape from reality.
Yes.
Open your eyes.
Yes. Come on. Come on, William.
Look up to the skies and see.
Now.
Just a poor boy.
He sold more copies of this than Naomi Campbell sold of her album, and probably of, you know, than Cher did of the Click song. But there it
you
is.
Know what would be worse?
What?
If we find out that Tyka Nelson has outsold Naomi.
Tyka Nelson. That's your favorite, Sia. She is, of course, Prince's sister. Horrible, horrible singer.
Tyka Nelson has released 4 albums.
Yeah. 4 albums.
4 albums?
No.
How many of them do you know?
Oh my God, that's terrible. 4 albums. Tyka Nelson sold 4 albums.
She reached number 33 on Billboard's Hot R&B Hip Hop Songs chart in July of 1988.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay.
Jesus, that's bad.
Looks like she's done better than Naomi.
Hey, apparently Vin Diesel has also made a new single. How do we like that?
Oh, no. I can't even stomach Vin Diesel speaking in a movie sometimes.
Yeah.
Janet says, Gareth, we know Carl snores like a chainsaw, but does he fart like a trooper too? And why do people always blame their farts on the dog? Carl doesn't fart that much, actually. Compared to like my mother's Jack Russells, jeez, those things. But
my little dog's getting old, and when he coughs, he farts. He does a combo.
That's
but
great.
But his bum, he's a miniature pincher, so his bum hole. I mean, you couldn't even put an earbud in there. So when they come out, they're like.
Guys, I'm just struggling with the fact that Christmas is 2 months away. It's too soon. I haven't yet got into. I mean, this year doesn't feel like it's properly happened.
It's actually technically less than 2 months away.
I know. Let's not. Please. The less obvious this becomes, or the more obvious it becomes, the worse I feel. I haven't thought about Christmas. I haven't thought about New Year. I was looking at my calendar, and we've basically got, 8 weeks, somewhere around there, 8-9 weeks till Christmas.
Really?
Yeah. It's madness, Sia. It's very, very scary. I'm not ready for it at all. I've never been so unready for the end of the year. Usually by this stage, I'm totally ready for it.
I think we just need to manage our expectations. I'm a little bit concerned by getting excited about the year ending, like when 2020 is over. Everyone says we can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah.
But not much is going to be different in the beginning of next year. Sorry to say.
Yeah, well, I'm still hoping that a whole lot of pieces fall into place after this US election, because I do think that the whole world is on tenterhooks for this, and it could have massive ramifications for all of us. So I just want that to be over. I really want it to be over. I'm not enjoying this at all. It doesn't give me any pleasure. It doesn't give me any joy. There's so much going on in the United States at the moment. And remember, when they talk about Joey having a cough and a fart at the same time, like when the United States coughs, everybody in the world gets a cold. So we just have to remember that this is a big part of why the coronavirus and everything else has been so politicized. It's still such a major issue. So I want it to be finished. Now, Leanne has got some really helpful tips for us. We try to be useful, not just funny and stupid on the show. We try to sometimes be useful. But a lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people unexpectedly need to leave their jobs for various reasons. And this is not always the easiest thing to do. So what we've actually done is Leanne has gone and worked on a list of really good things that you could do to help you move forward when you lose your job or you need to leave your job in a hurry. So help us out here, Leanne, because this might be the reality for many people.
Well, I mean, it's a reality for me.
Yeah.
In that a lot of clients have suffered during this time. And I mean, it's happening to so many people where you just don't have any more work.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the first thing has been to just deal with it, to admit it, deal with it mentally, and, you know, feel the emotions that are kind of associated with this. I mean, it's as bad as fear, panic, anxiety, lost sleep. And obviously the biggest issue for us is where's the money going to come from?
Yeah.
And so with that, that's where the panic comes in. And with that, you tend to make rash decisions on your next job or finding a job. You'll just take anything.
I'm going to stop you for a second, because when we talk about money, my only plan, I don't really have a plan. If if we go under and this show doesn't work anymore, then I'm going to have to win the lotto. That's the only way I'm going to make it. And I know we've been talking about this for a couple of days now, but here's one that I didn't know about, the mini Polish lotto. You heard about the mini Polish lotto?
No.
Okay, well, the mini Polish lotto takes place daily in a draw, offers a payout of 3 million rand. That's nice. Bets are only 3 rand. The mini Polish lotto is also known for the draw with the best odds of winning. So if you...
Very good.
Who wouldn't want a cool 3 million rand? I know we've been focusing on the big ones, but this sounds good, and you only have to put down 3 rand. You could win 3 million.
Jeez.
That's a hell of an increase on your initial investment.
Play that.
Yeah. You could bet
it's
now.
It's mini Polish with a massive winning.
That's right. You could bet now on lottoland.co.za. Lottoland is licensed with the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. You have to be 18 years or older to place a bet. Winners know when to stop. The National Responsible Gambling Toll-Free Counseling Line is 0800-006-008. Very good. So, all right. We don't all win the lotto, so what can we do?
So the first thing is to welcome all that's happening. So just acknowledge these feelings, and instead of saying no and pushing it away, just say, yes, this is happening, admit it, and just pause and recognize what's going on.
Instead of being in denial.
Yes, exactly. The next step is to do some inquiry. So think about how you would speak to a loved one or a friend in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you agree with them saying, I'm useless, I could have done better, I failed?
Yes.
See ya.
Okay.
And that's a way of looking at it. If you mirror it and say, should I be saying those things? No, they're probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, again, we might be panicked to just grab for any job that we can get next.
Right.
But there's actually, it's such a good opportunity, and it can be really refreshing to perhaps consider what you've really wanted to do all your life and start working towards that. This might be, you know, the stoking that you needed.
Mm-hmm.
You might change your career completely. And so once you've passed all of those initial emotions, it's actually quite a cool feeling where you can say, why don't I try this? Why don't I try that?
Sure.
It's a good time to, you know, it might be people down the line who tell their grandchildren, You know, I was this all my life, and then COVID happened. And I'm so glad that it did, because now I do, well, then I ended up doing what I wanted to do. So it's really good to feel a little bit free about it as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's useful stuff, but you still haven't got me a job.
Yeah. So
what's your answer to that?
Let's be clear that this article is about how to move forward.
Okay. All right. So you're not going to get us another job.
Obviously, you're now in the application process.
Yeah.
And you're looking for jobs. And I've actually found that it's not as barren out there.
No, you're right.
As one would think.
I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday. She's a teacher. And she just got a really good job offer. And she was about to find herself unemployed, you know. Her one contract was running out. And she got this really great job offer. And she said it just came like a lifeline out of the blue. She wasn't expecting it. She was pretty much convinced that she was going to be on the bones of her backside again. And she said this offer came through and it's like her dream job. So it just shows you that there are jobs out there. You just got to, you know, do what Leanne's saying. Have the right attitude and learn to cope with these things a little bit better. And who knows, you might just luck out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's lastly, and even though this sounds like a cliche, is to keep the big picture in mind. So from a year or now, or even sooner, mm-hmm. we might look back and we'll be glad that we had the time to reflect on what we wanted to do and went for it. So yeah, nothing lasts forever, people, remember.
Haven't you got a song for us, something inspirational, Leanne? I mean, you've been really good. The last couple of shows that you've been on, you've had very inspirational songs.
Mm. Well, so I've been thinking about what I want to do.
Yes.
And I think I'm going to be a traffic cop. I get all the cars to go and stop. Keep everybody on the hop when I become a traffic cop.
Yeah.
Always follow the, yeah. You are on your way to school. Behave yourself. Don't play the fool. Please obey the rules. And I will always be your friend. If your car breaks down, then I will lend you engine. So please don't offend your traffic cop friend.
Yes.
There
we
go.
That's what we needed to hear this morning. Woo! Fantastic. Isn't that great? Don't you feel better now? See, Leanne.
Yeah, I'm getting a bike and I'm getting a reflective jacket and I'm going to start practicing in the garden.
I thought that you were always cut out for being a traffic cop. not a meter maid, a traffic cop.
Yes, let's be clear.
Do you remember the meter maids?
Yes, I do. And I even remember seeing one meter maid who was in a wheelchair.
Oh.
And then she eventually stood up and put a ticket on the front of the car into the windscreen and then sat down back in her electric wheelchair and carried on.
So there was nothing wrong with her.
No, just tired. Just so tired.
So tired. First thing on a Monday, so tired. All right. These days, especially during these times, you know, being online has become so important in our lives. More and more, our everyday lives revolve around the ability to connect. I mean, even with this show, if we didn't have the ability to connect to you using the internet, we would be in big trouble. So we're going to speak in a moment or two to Jaco Voigt. He's been on once or twice before. He is the boss at Catalytic, and we'll find out. He's the chief executive officer, not just the boss. And we'll find out what he can tell us about making the world a little more connected and how the human component of that is a massive part of what they do at Catalytic. So we'll be speaking to him about the cloud. And we're not talking about the kind of cloud that brings rain. We had some of that in Joburg and Pretoria yesterday. We're going to talk about virtual servers and online backup and all the things that happen in the cloud that could make your life a whole lot better. So we'll be speaking to Jaco in just a moment or two. Stick around for that. And if you'd like to join Leanne in becoming a traffic cop, we'll obviously leave details on cliffcentral.com about how she's going to go about this and, you know, what kind of equipment she's going to need. You mentioned the reflective jackets, but you'll also you'll need a uniform.
Well, what I can say to young aspiring traffic cops as well is perhaps try and get into the Scholar Patrol.
I remember the Scholar Patrol. Did you join the Scholar Patrol, Leanne?
I never tried out for it because I was a prefect. And I think if you were a prefect, you couldn't be in the Scholar Patrol.
Oh, it's too many responsibilities.
Yes.
There's just too much. It's too much.
You must make it all fair.
Yeah.
You only have one job.
So the Scholar Patrol were the people, I remember, that would wear the reflective jackets and they would help the kids across the road.
Yes, they would have those big boons. What?
Booms.
Booms. With the stop sign.
Mills
on
and
the
boons.
And swing that out.
Yes, that's right.
Traffic.
That's right.
Very
that's
important
exactly.
job. Very
and
important.
They would help the moms park their cars and know where to drop the kids and all that stuff.
Yeah, very, now very it's important. 2020, so they help the dads too.
Yes. But in my day, it was just the moms.
Yeah, no, mine too.
The moms.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sia, were you in the Scholar Patrol?
No, we never had that at school.
Oh. You obviously had a very fancy school. You didn't need to worry about that stuff.
Just dodge the cars.
Yeah, in all three schools I went to, no, we never had that.
I was never in the Scholar Patrol because those people had to be at school earlier than everybody else so they could set up their little Scholar Patrol, you know?
And then you got a job that makes you get up at 4 a.m.
I know.
We did have actual patrol police or patrol officers at an intersection near my school. And I remember the penny dropping very late for my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he would drive us to school and he would often wave at this patrol officer and he would never wave back. And my grandfather would always get so grumpy, so rude. It's like, no, grandpa, he can't afford to wave at you because his hands are his work.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
He can't be like directing people and then wave next thing he causes an accident.
Well, Janet,
see where I get the great intellect from.
Janet says, our primary school Scholar Patrol were like a group of power-hungry road Hitlers. We didn't like them very much. Yeah, they always had instructions for everybody. I remember that. And they were mostly, I'm not going to say it's true for everyone, but I remember at my school, most of the Scholar Patrol people were losers.
They saved your life, Gareth.
Yeah, whatever. I never needed them. I knew how to cross the fucking road. I didn't need the Scholar Patrol. What do I look like? I've got very low IQ.
Oh,
God. I didn't need those guys.
Right,
yeah. All right. I said that we were going to talk to Yaku, and he's ready for us. Hey, Yaku, how are you, man?
Good morning. I think my day is ruined now. Baby Shark is out of my head, and I've got Leanne.
Yeah, the
I think my wife
song.
Can have a word with you because I get stuck with everything.
So you've got a new earworm. You've got a new earworm song. So I was talking just a moment ago, Yaku, about how everybody has to be connected and how important that connection is. And we've kind of discussed a little bit about this, but I'm interested in today's discussion because you're going to explain the cloud to us and what the advantages of being on a cloud have for your business and for yourself, virtual servers, online backup, that kind of thing. So talk to us a little bit about Catalytic because you guys are specialists in this and we're doing a podcast series of episodes with Catalytic called Unbundled, and Yaku is the CEO there, so he can help us to understand these kinds of things. Tell me about the cloud.
Thanks, Gareth. I think quickly before I start, can I just give a quick shout out to Candice van Heerden, which is your first the first Gareth Cliff listener that reached out to us. So
oh, cool.
I've got to acknowledge that, and we're very excited and happy about it.
Thank you, Candice. Good. You know who to talk to.
So from a cloud perspective, and I mean, it's obviously a big buzzword at the moment, and I think there's a lot of generalizations about it. So I think the first thing that's important is to understand what is cloud and how it fits into a business strategy. Mm-hmm. So for me, cloud is when a business takes their critical IT infrastructure and they outsource it or they entrust another provider, a specialist provider with that infrastructure. So typically that would mean I would then take my critical business applications. And that might be software or a mix of software and hardware, and I move it into that specialist provider's infrastructure for them to look after it. And then there's lots of benefits to it. I think everybody understands that I can't even call it the future. It's where everybody's at the moment. And the benefit of that for a business is that it allows you to focus on your core infrastructure instead of having to run this additional IT infrastructure, there's obviously cost benefits to it. If you're the man with a checkbook, especially in these days, you want to hold on to your capital.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to spend money on hardware unnecessarily and software for that matter.
Yeah, because what did people do before the cloud? They used to actually have big server rooms, right? And they would have huge amounts of hardware with storage and a whole lot of crap that mostly they didn't need and they didn't want to have to maintain. You'd have to hire a whole IT department to look after it. There were security concerns, firewall problems, power interruptions, and in this country, we can't deal with that.
It's very true. There's still a lot of customers that do that.
Yeah.
But even in their world, the cloud plays a role because how do you create redundancy and business continuity even if you have all of those? So it's exactly like you say, the costs just pile up. So even in those big IT departments, it's exactly that. Even in smaller customers, we see, you know, they have expensive retail space or rental space where they then have to build all of this infrastructure, and it's actually not necessary. And it's like anything in IT is once you start costing it, the costs just keep on piling up and piling up. So yes, so the trend is now that getting moved to specialist providers like ourselves, for example, and it, you know, the business then gets the benefit of not having to spend that. We keep on talking about consuming a service rather than investing capital into specific brands or vendors and then letting that catch you down the line. So our buzzword for that is you've got to future proof. You've got to understand where your future is at, and then make sure that you don't get caught.
Yaku, you guys would be able to advise us as well, because you don't know. I mean, a lot of companies don't know. Certainly, the CEO in many of these companies is busy worrying about the core business. They don't necessarily know what the specifications are that they require, what kind of storage space they're going to need, what kind of connection they're going to need. You guys take care of all of that, right?
Yes, 100%. I mean, you know, it's something that we talk about always. We've got to de-technify, how we engage with our customers. So it's always about what is the business problem, and then how do we solve that? And that is actually exactly like you said. Now that should be on the agenda of the CEO or the CFO. A lot of times, it almost gets shifted to IT because people say they don't understand and, you know, IT will just take care of it. But, there's a business problem. And once you understand the business problem, it's very easy to assist in terms of what the way forward is.
All right. So let's look at this just from the point of view that most of us interface with our technology. I get these reminders on my computer often, like I haven't backed up. And backup is a major thing because
I just got that email this morning.
Oh, you did? Yeah, you see, like this is something we've got to concern ourselves with, because if you lose your computer, let's say, you know, something happens to it from a hardware point of view, or you spill a glass of water on it, or you drop it when you're taking it out of the car, because this kind of thing happens to people all the time. You could lose that information permanently. And if you back it up on the cloud, obviously that's one place that it can be safe, and it can be safer than if you put it on a hard drive in your cupboard, right?
Well, it's actually I always say, you know, backup is very similar to insurance. You're only happy the day when you need it. And then on the day when you need it, you hope that it works. So it's always a critical element that. And specifically when people, when businesses, there's a general misconception. If I go and rent a server with a cloud provider, be it local or one of the big guys, multinationals like a Microsoft or a Amazon or something like that, I don't need to worry about backup because, those boys are big. It won't fail. You know, they've got so much redundancy in their networks that it won't be a problem. But it's actually untrue. And that's I always say it's the minimum that a business can do is to make sure that your critical server infrastructure is backed up.
Right.
That obviously spills down to an endpoint perspective, like you say, you know, somebody's laptop and all that type of stuff. But at minimum, you know, if they, you know, if a business uses their server infrastructure correctly, they would have a copy of whatever is important somewhere on some sort of central server, be it in their office or in this in a cloud environment. And then the minimum we have to do then is to make sure that it's backed up. And like I said, backup only works for you if you know that it works. So that's one of the things that I see a lot is where businesses don't take the time to say, let me make sure I actually test and restore a backup and see if it's actually going to work. Because, mm-hmm. You know, I just trust, and, you know, if my IT guy says to me, well, you know, the backups are there, I'm just going to, you know, I always say there's a lot of people that must be super religious because they've got a lot of faith, you know, they believe that stuff's just going to work. And a lot of the time people get caught.
And you can't run a business like that. I mean, you have to know where your information is stored, and you have to know it's stored safely and it's stored securely, and that you can access it when you need to. It can't just be deleted by someone by mistake. And that kind of thing has happened in businesses, big and small. Just tell me, because I'm curious about this, and you're probably the best person to ask. I've heard that they have these server farms all over the world, you know, especially the big cloud providers. And these are huge, big factories, essentially, where they just have massive numbers of machines, and they have to cool them the whole time. So they often build them in very cold countries. Have you ever been to any of these places? And what does it look like, Jaco?
So yes, I have been to one. In one of our upcoming conversations, we've actually launched a facility like that. So that's something that we'll be speaking about.
Yeah.
But yes, very, very much so. Interestingly, Microsoft had a experiment now where they actually had one like 35 meters under the sea in the north of England.
Wow.
And it was
under the sea.
Under the sea, so they it was in a obviously in a watertight container.
Mm-hmm.
They a lot of servers. They and it was I think they had an experiment now where it was down there for like 3 years or something like that. And recently they pulled it out. But yes, it's exactly like you say. You know, in those type of environment, important items are there's got to be power, like you say. There's got to be cooling, and then very importantly is physical security. You know, you've got to make sure that where your data is. And what you said now is, I think everybody is still a little bit punch drunk from COVID and not focusing on it.
Yeah.
With the Poppy Act coming into play, I believe June, July next year, every single business has to worry about where does their data sit, how secure is it.
Yeah.
Can I prove, let's call it the chain of custody, so that when there's a Poppy request or somebody says we didn't deal with their data correctly, I've got to be able to make sure that my bases are covered. So it's a very, very important element there.
Well, thank you.
To answer your question quickly, Gareth, around what it looks like, we always used to joke, my grandparents, they used to when they go to a... you know, one of the, like a begraafplaas, they always mm-hmm. used to say, you know, what is it the tombstones look like and all that type of stuff. Me, when I go into a data center, I love looking at what the equipment people have deployed there. So it's been passed down generations in a little bit of a different format. But to answer your question, I think unless you've got very, very specific interest in it, it's almost like the circus. If you've seen one, you've seen it all. It's just rows and rows and rows of racks with lots of aircon blowing and servers making noise. So it's interesting to see once, and then after that,
well, listen, Jaco, I'm afraid we're out of time, but thank you so much. It's always interesting to hear your thoughts on these things, and obviously there's more to be learned from Catalytic. You can go along to Catalytic, that's CATALYTIC.co.za, catalytic.co.za. Go and check them out, because they might be the solution that you're looking for. You can always find out more on their website, or you can click through the links on cliffcentral.com. If you also want to email them, go to letsconnect@catalytic.co.za. Jaco Voigt is their CEO, and he is our point man when it comes to understanding how all of this stuff works. Thanks, Jaco. Good to see you.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Awesome. Well, that's not where it ends for today, because we've still got more for you. In fact, we've been talking to the people at Kaspersky. They are, of course, the internet security company. And this is really interesting. You know, the world is filled with scary things, and we're all talking about internet security. And you've got to know this. Apparently, 90% of the security awareness mistakes that are made in a company, 90% of them, in other words, the things that allow, you know, viruses and hacks and all that kind of thing to happen, 90% of the mistakes that are accounted for in a company are actually made by the employees. Isn't that frightening?
It's an ID 10T issue.
A what?
ID 10T.
What?
Explain it, Leanne.
Well, that's the code for, you know, that IT specialists can use to each other, explaining what the real problem was with the incident. And if you write down ID, the number 10, and T.
Oh, idiot. Yes,
it's
you
an
really,
ID 10T
you
issue.
Actually had to spell that out for us. That's fantastic. Well, yes, it's an ID 10T issue, correct. And I spoke to a guy called Leon van den Heerfer. He is the Enterprise Cybersecurity Advisor for Kaspersky in Africa, about the threat to your business and to your personal life from the internet. You need to listen to this, because even if you think that it doesn't affect you, trust me, it affects you. And you need to know how to prepare your business by upskilling your employees. There's lots of useful information in here. It's a couple of minutes. It'll be worth your time. Take a listen to what I had to say and what Leon van den Heerfer had to tell me about cybersecurity. Here he is from Kaspersky in Africa, Leon van den Heerfer. CliffCentral.com. Well, there's an ever-changing cyber world around you, and it can be pretty scary to know that employees make up 90% of the security awareness mistakes for workforces. 90%. That's a shocking number. I'm sure you're as shocked and horrified as I am. But this is research that comes straight from Kaspersky. They're a global leader in cybersecurity solutions and in services built to protect your home and business. I'm sure you've heard the name somewhere. But today I'll be speaking to Leon van den Heerfer, who is the Enterprise Cybersecurity Advisor at Kaspersky for Africa. We'll talk to him about the cyber threat landscape and how you can prepare your business by upskilling your employees. So first of all, hi, Leon. How are you?
Hi, good. Good in yourself. Thanks for allowing
sure.
me.
Have you also been working from home?
Yeah, it's been almost like 6 months now working from home. Very, very interesting times, I guess. But it's like you said earlier, you know, it's much better without the traffic involved and stuff like that, and being able to manage your time a little bit better. But yeah, I'm starting to miss the people at the office though.
Well, you never thought you'd say those words, huh?
Nor did they.
So, Leon, let's just talk about working from home, because a lot of people have seemingly just carried on with what they were doing before, if they can do their job from home. But you've got to consider a bunch of other cybersecurity risks when you are working from home. And why, and I'm going to ask you why, because you're the guy who can answer this, why is it important to pay attention to these new risks?
Actually, the problem comes that usually when you were working in office, you would have a dedicated team taking care of cybersecurity, or at least taking care of the IT infrastructure, having the knowledge to understand what to do and what not to do. So hackers are having a field day at the moment, because your attack surface has expanded far beyond your office. Mm. You've got people moving into remote working environments, and obviously a lot of the companies had to mobilize their workforce extremely, extremely quickly. Some of them in less than a week, they had to literally mobilize the staff. So it's important to note that the infrastructure that we have at our houses are more or less, it's consumer-grade infrastructure. So it's there with ease of use in mind and not necessarily security first. So this is a very big cybersecurity issue for most of the companies that they're struggling with this at the moment. And there's a lot that can be done about it, but it was just the time that was involved in this rapid move over into mobilizing workforces really put a lot of companies in a difficult, difficult spot.
And of course, companies can't be there in your home infrastructure to make sure everything is firewalled or taken care of from a security point of view. You know, you just use your home internet like you would have at the office, and that can be very, very dangerous.
Absolutely, yes. That was the first challenge, is the logistics behind how do you actually get hands on to the small home networks, the home offices now. So obviously there's some remote tool capabilities, but that also required some awareness training and enhancing of skills of the staff. So it's just, it was a nightmare for a lot of, especially the big organizations. You know, they've got thousands of people that had to be mobilized suddenly. We're talking about some organizations that had to mobilize entire call centers. And some of these guys might have an unstable connection at home. So there's that question. There's the question of, like you just rightfully said, your router that you get from whatever supplier doesn't necessarily have all the security measures in place to run a business.
I mean, most people don't even change the password on their router. You know, they just use admin. It's frightening.
Yeah, 100%. So that's 101.
Yeah. So, Leon, the size of your business doesn't matter here either, because big businesses are targeted just as much as little ones.
Yeah, so the thing is that big businesses, small businesses, no one's really surprised as being able to scale into remote workforces slightly better than most SMBs. SMBs are having a bit of a challenge due to obviously lack of resources and skills at some point in time. So that might be the reasons. While the bigger enterprises, obviously, they could mobilize maybe funds from another budget, like maybe a marketing budget, because they might not be doing events for that year or something like that. Mobilize that funds and quickly put up the right infrastructure done by the right skillful people. So we have seen a little bit of difference between SMBs being a little bit more vulnerable during this time than enterprises.
Right.
But nonetheless, I mean, there's not really a big difference. No one's immune. At the end of the day, internet has made the world very, very small. So a hacker can attack a big corporate, a small corporate, thousands of corporates at the same time. It really doesn't matter to them. It's all about the intention and what they want to gather from that attack.
Let's just talk quickly about preparedness, because inadequate preparedness and cyber awareness are obviously things that are you're taught in particularly in IT departments within big businesses and small. But it's something that most people don't really know very much about. So how does that help employees to make the business less risky, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. So preparedness is actually the big problem here, is that no one could have obviously been prepared for what COVID had in stake and how fast anyone needed to react to that. Not even the biggest corporates with the biggest disaster recovery plans would have ever been able to predict this level and scale of mobilization of workforce. But at the end of the day, preparedness is the biggest issue here. At least some base knowledge needs to be put in place. I mean, I always say that there's two things they don't teach you in school, and that's taxes and cybersecurity. At the end of the day, we were given these handheld devices with the world's power at your fingertips. It's almost like going into war without any weapons training. We were just given this enormously powerful tool, and it's clicky and fun and interactive, and it's got so much power, but we were never really taught what the downfall and how to really work with these devices properly. So preparedness is absolutely key, and that's where we try and come into play, is just to kind of help with awareness and so on, and getting people to bridge that gap.
What about the importance of just general digital literacy? I mean, that's a big deal. Employees aren't necessarily digitally aware and able to figure out their way through a program or through an app to know how safe or unsafe they are. How can Kaspersky support businesses with this awareness? I mean, what do you guys offer? Training programs, sustainability? What kinds of things do you offer?
Yeah, this is actually a very important topic, and something that I'm quite passionate about is the fact that, you know, us as Kaspersky, we a worldwide organization, but not a massive organization. We have 4,000 plus people. A third of us are R&D, and then we've got a team of great members. We call them great global research and analysis team. These are some of the most highly skilled, notorious malware analysts in the world. And we can't save the world from cybercrime by our own hands. We're just not big enough. So we really try and enable everyone of every organizational type, from every skill level, to get up to speed on cybersecurity and cyber awareness. So the product that we have at the moment for literacy is called ASAP. It's Automated Security Awareness Platform. And what this does, it's a very, very interesting solution. I love the way that they executed on it, especially when it comes to pre-assessment of your skill level. So the big issue with a lot of these training programs that's introduced into organizations is that either they're boring or either you can't get the people to learn or unlearn stuff to relearn new stuff. There's always a problem to get people interactive and get them involved into the training. So we've actually got a curriculum that was worked out by cybersecurity professionals, but also by learning and academia professionals to understand exactly what are the actual things that hold back people psychologically from the training and how can we make them get involved. So we actually created a program that is developed around the Ebbinghaus learning curve. This is a methodology of learning and relearning people the same stuff over and over until the software sees that you've got a grip of it now.
What is that called?
The Ebbinghaus learning curve.
Okay.
Yes. So it's just a technique of relearning to a point where your knowledge has become a skill. So skill is obviously applied knowledge. So that you don't just think about the stuff for a couple of weeks and then you lose track and you start getting involved in other stuff. And when you revisit that topic, you forgot what's important. So we really want to build skills instead of just pumping people with knowledge. It's also beneficial for their own personal life. At the end of the day, they can speak to their neighbors. They can speak to their kids. I mean, I see kids as young as 10 years old running around with tablets these days. And I just think, you know, what's this world come to? There's no problem with it, but there needs to be a level of understanding as far as cybersecurity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, kids are so much at risk, and parents just seem to think that kids will know where the lines are and whether or not they should cross them. And they don't. I mean, most adults are still figuring this stuff out, right?
Most of the kids have more skills than the adults do.
Exactly.
So if you've got problems with your internet, you can ask your 10-year-old. They'll probably know how to fix it. But at the end of the day, they also do it mostly for personal gain. They're kids. So they don't think about the consequences. They don't think about what could go wrong at the end of the day. And this is where we try and obviously bring back that little bit of awareness to understand what mistakes to avoid.
So give us a few tips and some advice for free, because that's what a lot of people want. I know that we usually have to pay for this, but during this time where we're working from home, where a lot of people are trying to do things offsite, they're using mobile technology, they're using home internet. Give us a few tips and tell us what we can do and not do to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah, so there's a few things that we've seen rising, especially during the COVID period, that should be like top of mind. And the first thing that we've noticed a massive uptick in is fake news. And fake news is not, there's some dual purpose in fake news. One of the reasons people publish fake news is to obviously get bandwidth or move traffic to a specific maybe marketing engine. The other reasons could be that there's nefarious activity behind the link. So if you click on the link, it takes you through to something that's of malicious intent. We've actually seen, for example, pictures of a Black Friday horde of people, you know, going through a glass window, you know, to get into a store. And they said that this was people that were rushing to get PPE equipment from pharmacy. And that was obviously false news to create panic, create havoc, etc. So that's one of the things. We've also unfortunately seen a massive rise in ransomware and brute force attacks, because now you've got your normal users sitting at home that used to be in a business. Now you can brute force them, because one of the biggest problems that people have, and I'm getting to the skills just now or a couple of tips, is they don't have proper passwords. And it's really, really strange. I mean, if you think about it, your car, your house, your vault, they all have separate keys, right? Why don't you do that for your digital life? Why do so many people have one password that they seem strong, and they have it for their you know, their banking, they have it for their Gmail or their Yahoo, they have it for everywhere. If I can get into your Gmail, I can essentially unlock your entire life.
That's right. People use the same one for their bank, for heaven's sake, you know?
I know, exactly. And then they don't change them, ever.
No.
Or they add a one to the end, then a two, then a three. So to get to the tips, first and foremost is the passwords. Try and think about a way to get – you can even Google techniques on remembering passwords. If you really do struggle, there are products on the market like password managers. Kaspersky has one as well, where you will need to remember one password, and that password unlocks all your very, very strong passwords that Kaspersky generates for you. The other thing that we've seen a massive uptick in, and this is something that just needs to be trained, is people clicking on phishing links. Phishing is obviously, I think a lot of people are aware of what phishing is because the banks have done a really good job of making people aware through their constant emails and notices. But it's the process of just using human weakness to socially engineer you into clicking something that you're not supposed to click on. And we've seen a huge rise in this. I've actually had, in my family, I'm now the local guy that they send all these SMSs to with bit.ly links on them that says that, for example, you need to go and sort out your taxes here, click on the link to verify your details, and then I can go and execute that link safely in a virtual environment to check what it's about. And then it's all defrauded or fake versions of the original websites, whether it's a bank, whether it's the tax SaaS or something like that. So phishing links, you really need to start focusing on. And then obviously, not just that, there's people falling for scams still these days. I don't understand how people still think you'll get random SMSs giving you money or allowing you to win stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we can all dream, but it's nonsense, right? It's just nonsense.
It's absolute nonsense. And at the
get nothing for nothing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And if you fall for that stuff, you know, yeah.
No. And I mean, if for some reason someone gave you a free lunch, then boss up that one free lunch.
Yeah, because there's probably a cost attached at the end that you don't know about that's going to be horrible.
They're
going to
sell you something, exactly. if all else fails, call your IT people. So if you think you were maybe attacked, if you think there was a breach, if you think something happened, ask your IT people, please have a look. Don't keep quiet. Let's quickly sort it out and see what's going on. Thank you.
Leon, thank you so much. Leon van Heerfer is the Enterprise Cybersecurity Advisor at Kaspersky in Africa. And you can find out more about Kaspersky's SMB business solutions, particularly their automated security awareness training, which is a platform for increasing digital literacy of employees. And you can find out all about that on the web. If you need to know, just ask Kaspersky. They're your first stop to figure this stuff out. Thanks so much, Leon.
Thanks a lot, Gareth. Appreciate it. CliffCentral.com